Welcome to In the Middle. I'm Joey Block. A lot of news to get to this week. Let's get right to it. The House January 6th Select Committee has subpoenaed former President Trump to appear before them, as well as provide documents. The committee did this yesterday at what was supposed to be their final hearing, but at the last minute became a business meeting. It became a business meeting so that they could issue a subpoena for the former president. If the former president refuses to comply with it, a vote would then be taken in front of the full House to hold him in contempt, similar to what happened to Steve Bannon. Now the whole procedure is, it's not completely foreign, as this happened with Harry Truman back when he was a former president, as well as John Quincy Adams. So it's happened before, but in a very long time, but none of the presidents and former presidents that this has affected ever had to come before Congress. So the likelihood of them actually getting the former president to appear is probably slim to none. But anyways, we can go through this. This would then be sent to the Justice Department with a criminal referral, or Congress could move to detain Trump themselves. So basically, they did this with a Commerce Department official a long time ago, back in, I believe it was the 1800s, where they had this guy who was some foul play there, and Congress basically locked the guy up in a hotel room for 10 days. So they can do it. The question is, do they want to? Because with the Mar-a-Lago raid already, and we have some news about that, that could create a problem of that our freedoms are at risk. You know, the Republicans already have the narrative of, okay, so they're going after Donald Trump. Then they go into Donald Trump's home, so it's an attack on American freedoms, and the FBI is going to come after you. Then they pass the Inflation Reduction Act, increasing the amount of IRS agents who are going to come after you and bang on your door with firearms to audit your taxes and to take more of your money. So your freedom's at risk. This is what the Republican Party is running on, okay? They are going to play this freedom argument. So if the January 6th committee in the House go down this road and they're Democratic controlled, it could give the GOP an opening here. Now, the GOP, their best interest is, one, to dismiss this, and two, to use the freedom argument. Because, in case you've been out of the loop the last week or so, the GOP has a chance of making some major gains in places it hasn't in decades. Look at Oregon. There's a chance of picking up a congressional district there, as well as the governor's mansion. And a lot of that's being attributed to the problems we saw in Portland with crime, as well as the rioting that we saw in the summer of 2020 and the protests during the Black Lives Matter movement. Some people thought it went a little too far. So they could have an opening there. And also, a big one that I'm personally keeping an eye on is Rhode Island CD2. Rhode Island CD2, this is a hard blue district, okay? There's not a lot of people who are Republican in this area traditionally. This is a traditionally Democratic district without question. It should not even be on the radar, but it is. And the Democrats are looking at this and saying, we got to do something here. And the reality is, the Republicans probably will shut down this committee if they get control of the House. So there's that to keep in mind there too, that they could probably be taking this committee to task. I mean, guys, we're done with the investigation. This is a Trump witch hunt. We're done. That's the end of it. And they're basically trying to do their Hail Mary here and to say, okay, we need to have something big here. This has got to be the end. We got to have something. All right, let's go to the man at the top. And that we're going to have to see whether that works or not. Because if you watched that hearing yesterday, a lot of the evidence was stuff that we've already seen before. We saw the Cassidy Hutchinson tapes. We saw a lot of what the vice president had said at the time, Mike Pence. We've seen a lot of the evidence of all those Trump administration officials, Bannon, Pat Cipollone, Bill Stepien, you name it. We've heard from all these people before. The only thing new was that video that happened during the Capitol where we saw Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, and then you heard the vice president on the phone where you heard all those people talking about how they're going to deal with this in the current situation. Oh, Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia at the time, these were the people you heard. But besides from that, a lot of it was relatively the same. So with that in mind, they got to come up with something. So now the Justice Department is, of course, in a little bit of an array as well, because the tradition on, well, not on paper, but off paper, the unwritten policy is 60 days out from election, we don't prosecute or move forward with political cases. And this Trump stuff would be considered very political. Now, you may remember back a week ago, the Washington Post came out with a report that feds believe that Hunter Biden, there's enough evidence there to charge him on the tax evasion and the gun charges. So if there could be a perception of bias here. If Merrick Garland says, we're going to prosecute this Trump case, we're going to hold him in contempt, this guy is clearly evading Congress, but they don't do the Hunter Biden stuff, then they're really going to have a hell of a case for the Republicans to take power in the House, in the Senate, and then possibly the presidency in 2024. So Merrick Garland's got to walk a fine line here of what he wants to do. And that could mean either prosecuting both the cases, if that's what's going to happen, or do nothing with them until after the midterms. So he's got the fine line he's going to have to walk here, and we're going to have to see how he walks it. Now, that wasn't the only thing that former President Trump had to deal with this week in terms of his legal cases. And the next one is definitely more of a headache for him. The Supreme Court has rejected his request for a special master to have renewed access to classified documents seized from Mar-a-Lago. The court wrote, quote, the application to vacate the stay entered by the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit on September 21st, 2022, presented to Justice Thomas and by him referred to the court is denied, close quote. There were no dissents amongst any of the justices. So that's important to note because Trump appointed 3 of the justices. So there was some interesting back and forth on whether they would side with Trump, but clearly they did not. And this essentially leaves in place the decision by the 11th Circuit Court barring Special Master Raymond Deere from looking over the 100-plus documents marked classified. And you're probably saying, oh my God, this is the end of the world. Well, there were more than 11,000 documents seized during the raid of former president's home in Palm Beach. So he's got a lot to look at. So the man has no shortage of reading material, to say the least. But the debate is over the classification because, as you may recall, former President Trump is trying to make the argument of, I had the authority to classify this. I didn't need to run this by anybody. A president can classify or declassify anything that they want as long as they are currently in office. And Kash Patel, who is the former chief of staff at the Department of Defense in the latter days of the Trump years, he said that he witnessed such a thing, but we're not able to find any written documentation of that. So there's that whole debate of the classification. Then whether that Trump had the ability to have the documents all together is also a question. But then, of course, you have to go back to the politics of the game here, is why are all these cases against former President Trump coming now? Now, it would be very easy to say, well, you know, it's, you got to indict the guy. If he did a crime, we gotta act on it now. But again, we go back to this idea of, in our political system, we don't prosecute political cases during elections. And this is a big test for the Justice Department, where they're going to do that. And then, if you are looking for a political strategy right now, the Democrats did need a Hail Mary pass here, because the only thing they really got right now is abortion. The abortion, even the gun violence thing. Yeah, they're kind of on the winning side of that if you look at the polling, because they are pushing for massive gun control measures. They got that big gun bill done back earlier in the year. It was a big bipartisan bill. They hadn't got anything like that done in like 30 years. So they had a victory there, but they weren't really able to capitalize on that. And the Democrats need to boost that message of this law and order thing, because the defining issues are becoming now inflation, economy, and crime. And right now, the Democrats need to figure out what the answers are for that. And as of this moment, they don't have any. So you could argue that they are now going to lean in on the January 6th stuff. We need to prosecute Trump stuff. He's a bad man, scary man. We can't let him run again in 2024. You could start to see that happen. You could start to see them, what, they got no other options. They're just going to run with this and see how it goes. Now, maybe that could work. But you have to remember, go back, and let's use a Democratic president as an example, Bill Clinton. You know how many investigations and scandals that him and Hillary had to deal with? You remember Whitewater? Monica Lewinsky? Now, I'll give you, Monica was not an election year. That was more 1998, so it was more towards the end of all of it. But it was still a scandal. Uranium One. Then later on, when Hillary Clinton started running, the Clinton Foundation. So the Democrats had to deal with this too, and Republicans were going after them. But here's the thing. That didn't seem to really affect the Clinton family for the most part. Well, it did when you got to the email scandal with Hillary. That might have, in the long run, affected her 2016 chances, the way that played out with Comey announcing that they were looking into it again, and then a week or two later saying, no, we're not. And by that point, Trump already got his little boost. People will start voting, and that was the end of that. But with Bill Clinton, we knew about this. Paula Jones, we knew all about what was going on there. But Bill Clinton continued to poll well and to perform well in elections, and his party did pretty well. So if you put all that into context, this may not do anything. Well, you'll have to admit, yeah, the Republicans had that one good year and Newt Gingrich became Speaker, and they had that impeachment. But that impeachment didn't really affect Bill Clinton's approval rating. When he left, he was 60 plus. American people liked what he was doing, because, as James Carville always likes to say, it's the economy, stupid. And the economy is what the problem is. Now, you could say during the Obama years, towards the end, economy's had some good numbers there too. Hillary should have won there. Well, that's a little more complicated, because then the 2016 crowd that voted for Trump felt like they were left out for a long time. These economic numbers weren't reflecting them. So there has to be a sense of feeling out there. The non-record stuff that you don't see in the data. But now we have data that's backing this up. Now, there is the argument over whether we're in a recession, whether or not. A lot of people out there are probably going to say that they feel like we are. That's just a plain, simple fact. And when you combine that with inflation fears, stock market going up and down, although on Thursday it did have a bit of a rally, but we're starting to see these economic warning signs here. And if you have that and people are having trouble paying for gas, paying for groceries, the electric bill is getting a little too pricey as we're going into winter, that may lead people to make a decision of voting for a Republican over a Democrat. And possibly Trump in 2024. They might say, oh, this guy's a little crazy, but hey, if he's gonna lower my gas prices and it's gonna be a cheaper trip to the grocery store, hell, I might just vote for this guy. Same thing that happened to Bill Clinton, despite all his controversies too. So a lesson to be learned there. And the Democrats may just have to look back to that history to see if they can land it. Because if it didn't work for the Republicans then, it may not work for them now. Now, speaking of the midterms here, we are in the final stretch of it. We are less than a month away from the big election in November. And polls are starting to tighten across the country. And a lot of key races. And the key House races, the key Senate races, a lot of governor's races too. Especially here in New Jersey, where redistricting didn't really give Republicans a fair shake in their view. They were, you know, hammering and hawing, oh my God, this is terrible. Tom Kaine's really the only one who's going to get any successful year out of this. Everything else is going to stay the same. Well, now you're starting to see a different tone from these New Jersey Republicans. You just need to look to Frank Pallotta in the 5th District. He's trying to get some ground there on Josh Gottheimer. We had Josh Gottheimer on last week, so definitely check that out if you haven't listened to it. And then there's also another guy, Paul DeGroote. There's a heated battle going on in the 11th District between incumbent Democratic Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill and Republican congressional candidate Paul DeGroote. Now, what was written off as a Democratic hold due to redistricting may not be so certain anymore. Because a lot of people had this solid blue, likely blue, 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 blue. There was no toss-up, no red, no nothing. But now, we're starting to see it in places that are a lot more Democratic than this area we're talking about today. They're either lean red, they're toss-up, possibly red. If those areas are, does Paul DeGroote have a shot at ousting Mikey Sherrill, who ousted a longtime Republican congressman back in 2018 in a traditionally Republican district? Is he now going to be the next Republican congressman of the 11th district? Well, joining me now to discuss this is New Jersey 11th District Republican congressional candidate Paul DeGroote. Paul, thanks for coming on.
No, hey, you're helping me out, so I should thank you. Getting my message out and getting the words out, very important right now.
I want to start by talking about a recent development in the campaign. It was recently announced that there will be 3 debates between you and your opponent, incumbent Democratic Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill. You had been advocating for 1 debate in each county. Do you feel some sense of vindication?
I feel a small vindication. I don't feel that this is the right vindication that I should feel. This COVID is done as far as I know that vaccinations are on and people are opening their businesses. And why are we doing these things virtually? Out of the 3 debates, 2 have been agreed to virtually. She's a 2-term sitting congresswoman. Why doesn't she want to appear on the stage with me in a fair forum? Right now she offered 1 on stage with the League of Women Voters. The League of Women Voters has been known to be hostile to Republicans. And that was the only one she was offering. And that was late in October, May, I think it's October 25th or 26th. I can't recall. And why is it so late? Because she wants her lies against my positions to be out there and people would be voting by mail, not knowing the truth. Now she comes up with, oh, I'll agree to 2 more. again, they're now, these are Zoom meetings. They're not going to be in person. Why are we doing this? We should be on the stage, talking to each other, looking at each other, so that the people can judge who's telling the truth and who's lying. And I think they'll know who at the end of the debates. She is lying on a lot of her positions, and she is an image that is not true.
I want to talk more about her policy positions as well as yours. Last time you were on the show, you said SALT relief is huge when referring to the Inflation Reduction Act. You've criticized Congresswoman Sherrill for supporting the IRA despite there being no SALT relief in the bill. If you were in Congress, how would you work to restore the state and local tax deduction?
Well, first, let me point out another lie by my opponent. So Mikey Sherrill now is run an ad saying that I'm against SALT relief. Joey, you just got it right. You know it because I spoke to you. She's saying I'm against SALT relief, and she was always for it. That is unbelievable. She walks through the truth like it doesn't even exist. So now she's painting me as someone who's saying that I don't want SALT. I have been campaigning on that issue for a year, and I knew that when push came to shove, and when it came to a tough issue to fight for New Jersey and fight for residents of CD11, she just did what Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden want. She has not fought for this district or this state at all. It's a big issue. And what I'll do is I'll stick my heels in the ground and I'll say, no, I'm not budging. When a bill is proposed and I don't get SALT back for CD11, I'm going to tell McCarthy, no, I'm not doing this. I'm going to stand my ground. You're going to have somebody, you know, I retired from the prosecutor's office. I'm fortunate enough to have a pension and medicals, and I realize so many people don't, and they're struggling nowadays. But why I say that is because I'm beholden to no one. I don't have to do what my McCarthy says. I don't have to do what somebody else says. I can stand and fight for New Jersey. I'll work with the Democrats. I'll work with McCarthy. I'll work with Republicans. But I'm going to be my own man. I already signed up for term limits. That's how sure I am. I'm going to go in and do the right things. I'm not going to stab New Jersey in the back like Mikey Sherrill did on the SALT relief. I will work with them. And when a bill comes up that SALT is part of, I'll fight like hell to get SALT passed. Mikey Sherrill had a chance in 2018, 2020, 2022. She's not gotten it done. And now she says she's going to try again in December after the elections. This is just another flimsy excuse.
Now, going a little more details here, you obviously said that you're going to fight for SALT. You're not going to back down. You won't support any bills that don't include SALT relief on it if it's the type of bill that SALT should be a part of. But in regards to the policy of it, because we've heard different proposals where they'd move the cap up to $80,000. Like right now, the cap is like $10,000 you can take on property taxes. Correct. What is that number for you? What does that policy look like for you?
Any advancement on raising the cap is a victory. She hasn't even gotten us that. Jersey is, in my opinion, and I think it's backed up by science and statistics, this is one of the most overtaxed, if not most overtaxed states in the nation. It is a tough area to live in, and affordability is really hard to do, especially with inflation going through the roof, gas prices going through the roof, food prices going through the roof, mortgage prices, rent prices. It's a tough state to do. So I would work on raising the cap. I would love to get the full deduction back like we had before. But I will work with the Democrats to make sure it gets done. If there's Democratic Congress people in New Jersey, in Connecticut, New York, I'll work with them. And, you know, as a Republican, I know it's important for the residents of CD11. So I will, any raise would be good, but I'd love the full deduction back.
Let's talk about gas. OPEC announced last week it's cutting oil production by 2 million barrels a day starting in November. We're already starting to see some gas prices go up across the country. How do we bring down the cost of gas?
Good question, and you're absolutely right. You went to bed, I think, last Wednesday, and you woke up on Thursday, gas was 20 cents higher. So first of all, it's Biden's administration and Biden himself that has caused this now with OPEC. He has a terrible relationship with OPEC, and he caused that in part by taking a stand on an issue and it was insulting to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And that's really a bad thing. First of all, his diplomacy failed and they raised the rates. But more importantly, we shouldn't be relying on OPEC. We shouldn't be relying on Venezuela. We were trying to overthrow them. Not we. We were supporting a group that was trying to turn the government and overthrow the government. And now we're asking them to pump more oil. So OPEC. OPEC is constantly tampering and changing what they do, pumping more oil, pumping less oil. They control the markets. We should be controlling the markets. And at the very least, we should be energy independent. We have 400 years of natural gas and oil. We are a very clean country compared to others like China and India. We should be looking at nuclear power. And this green energy, solar power, wind, thermal, they all have a place in lessening the carbon footprint that we have. But we need to pump oil and get natural gas. That is our biggest resource. And it is one of the cleanest resources, natural gas. And when the winter comes and you see the prices you're facing, you'll say, wow, Paul DeGroot was right. I mean, this is bad. We are going to be facing about a 25% energy increase. And it's going to be a choice for some people to either turn up the thermostat or not buy food for this week. So that is the hard facts.
I want to move to a different subject. You've said abortion is an issue that should be left up to the state. That means opposing a national abortion ban that has been proposed in Congress. You say New Jersey's abortion laws are right for the state. There's a bipartisan group of senators who are looking to codify abortion to federal law. Would you support a bill that expands abortion access at the federal level?
Okay, so here's where I want to be clear. I am pro-choice. I believe in a woman's right to choose. Mikey Sherrill is again lying on my record. That is a distinct attack on her character. She is walking through the truth. She knows the truth. Her team knows the truth. I stated it. This is about probably the fifth, sixth times I've stated it. I am for a woman's right to choose. I am compassionate about a woman's decision. I hope that decision is made as early as possible. I am in favor of exceptions. It is a disgusting attack by Mikey Sherrill to accuse me of being okay and accepting rape and incest. That's another lie. She should be held accountable. She is a congresswoman who is just walking through the truth. I am for exceptions for health of the mother, medical emergency, fetus viability, or fetal viability, and exceptions for rape and incest. It is unbelievable that she would accuse me of that in such day and age. I am for the Dobbs decision. The Dobbs decision sets it where it should have been always, a state decision. I would be against a law and federally outlawing abortion, and I would be against a law federally permitting abortion in total. There is Lindsey Graham has a bill that he would want to advance somewhere along the lines of 15 weeks. I think that is a starting point for a conversation that the nation we should have. In Europe, we are only in the world, we are only one of six countries that allow abortion from beginning to right through the end of the ninth month on demand. Two other the countries are China and North Korea. Many countries in Europe have bans of 13 weeks, 15 weeks, 20 weeks. So I think that is a fair discussion. But again, I am pro-choice in this state, and I am in favor of a woman's right to choose. I have a daughter, 2.5, and I want to be there for her. And more importantly, Mikey Sherrill is the extremist in this race on that issue. She is 100% from beginning to end in favor of abortion. She's in favor of a partial birth abortions. She's in favor of disconnecting parental rights. Parents have no right to be even notified in Mikey Sherrill's world. I want to be part of my daughter's life. I want parents to be part of their children. And if this is going to be a medical procedure, parents should have counseling with their daughter. They should be there for their daughter. So Mikey Sherrill is the extremist in the race, and Paul DeGroot is not. So again, you have to judge the politician who is lying constantly on salt and on abortion, and other things, her illegal stock trades, and forgetting her illegal stock trades on the Armed Services Committee, where she traded Raytheon stock while she was on this committee. her illegal stock, her illegal failure to declare $390,000 in the money that made was made with her and her husband. How do you forget $390,000? Joey, if you and I, if we misplaced $20 out of our pocket, we would know it. She just forgets $390,000. She's a different type of politician. She's not good for Jersey.
So you have a legal background, and that's important to note, because as someone who practices the law, and you clearly stated that you wouldn't support a federal ban on abortion or a bill codifying it at the federal level. It's kind of like the old thing we learn in science class where matter can't be created nor destroyed. So thinking back to that, if these laws ended up being brought in front of a judge, would they be able to hold up in a court of law based on the legal knowledge you have?
I say no. The Dobbs decision is clear. This issue is being used by the left to stir up their base. New Jersey has abortion rights. Nobody in New Jersey should be afraid or upset that the abortion is still legal in New Jersey. Nothing's been taken away. That decision, the Dobbs decision, is very clear that Roe v. Wade is no longer the law of the land. It's a flawed decision, and that the Dobbs decision says it's up to the states. States have varying degrees of what they, some states have, like New Jersey, from beginning to end, or they have things like 13 weeks, 18 weeks. The Dobbs decision, if a federal a ban on abortion was made, or a federal law allowing abortion on demand was made, I think SCOTUS, our Supreme Court, would rule that unconstitutional. I think they are very clear in the Dobbs decision that this is a state's issue now, not a federal issue. So why, Congress can make as many laws as it wants. It doesn't mean they're going to be constitutional. Many times congressional laws are struck down. And I think SCOTUS, with the Supreme Court and with this decision, would quickly rule that you cannot make a law in Congress that would codify abortion abortion on demand or outlaw abortion. So I think that Dobbs decision is clear, and I'm representing the law. Mikey doesn't, you know, I don't even think she's read the Dobbs decision. So, and that's another problem, just to make outlandish statements without even researching the issue.
I want to get more of your insight as a prosecutor. Crime is a big problem across the nation, and lately we've seen a couple of these instances of it in New York, including a dad being shot in Poughkeepsie while visiting his son who's attending college, and gunfire in front of Republican gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin's Long Island home. Republicans have largely been pointing the blame at mayors and DAs in big cities, but now we're starting to see these instances creep out into the suburbs. Can we solely pin it on politicians in urban areas?
I think what you can see is the difference between urban and suburban area. In CD 11, there is not an urban area like Newark or Patterson or Camden. So we have suburban. We have cities. We have Parsippany and all. But our towns are going through a different crime wave. Take it, New York and the major cities are going through murders, robberies, attacks on the subway, knifings. But we are going through a crime wave of burglaries, home break-ins, car thefts. We've seen a dramatic increase. There was a car chase up in Booton where it led into a crash and five people being arrested. We've also seen that juveniles are now being used. Bail reform is one of the problems here. Bail reform for nonviolent people in New Jersey. And Mikey Sherrill, she did criminal justice reform while she was a federal prosecutor. Never tried a case, never did the hard work of taking drugs off the street or guns off the street like I did. She did criminal justice reform. That's a federal name for bail reform. Bail reform in New Jersey has been a nightmare. We are releasing nonviolent offenders quickly back onto the streets. That's why we are having the home break-ins. That's why we are having the car thefts. Our attorney general has ruled that made rules and regulations on pursuits and how much pursuits have to be broken off. That is another problem. The criminals know this. They have records a mile long. And what I've seen right now is they're recruiting juveniles. They're recruiting juveniles to steal the car in Mountain Lakes or Pine Brook or Parsippany, and drive it down to Newark. And that's where the adult takes the car from there. The adult is safe because now it's more of a joyriding issue for him rather than receiving stolen property. And juveniles in this state are almost never held because of bail reform and because they're juveniles. So we are getting an explosion of that type of crime. There are solutions to this. There are solutions that we can, you know, grant money for more plate readers. I can work with the state of New Jersey to change the laws, our local assembly people, our local senators. I would work with them and I would represent the views of the people in the district. So there is a crime wave. It's just a different crime wave.
Now, I want to switch gears here. A big issue for many voters this cycle is what's going on at the U.S.-Mexico border. If elected, what would you do to solve the border crisis?
All right, 100% I would do things differently. Right now, we are having the largest flooding of migrants coming across the border illegally. In New York and in cities across the nation, they're being housed in hotels, and they're being housed in, there's talk about housing them on a cruise ship. It's happening everywhere. There is a major problem on the southern border. What I would say is this: instead of the huge increase in federal agents for taxation, they're going to be hiring, I believe it was 80 something IRS agents. Shouldn't we take at least half that and do border control agents or more border control agents, better technology, better use of drones, better use of night vision, more secure borders, more fencing, more wall, more fencing. And let's think of something a little bit outside the box. Let's help Mexico seal their southern border. That should be an idea that we should be talking about. Then we help them seal their southern border, and this is a discussion that should happen, and it was happening for a while. Then we also talk about streamlining the deportation process. As a prosecutor, again, I'm the only one that's dealt with this issue. Mikey Sherrill never dealt with illegal immigration. I have. In my job, there were many times there would be nonviolent offenders who would be released because they're nonviolent and they're illegal. And one of the questions I asked was, why are they walking out the door? We should be immediately walking them to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And we should be immediately starting the immigration deportation process. We need to stream that process. We need to appoint the right judges. The judges need to be the type of judges that see this as a problem and identify it and make their rulings fast and make their rulings after hearing the evidence and hearing the appeals. We have to streamline this process. People are seeing this as they can stay here for 2 years and work the system, 2 years or more, and work the system. And then, you know, then what we have is additional children being here. We have an argument that, look, I've been here for so long, I'm working, I don't have a criminal record. So that process has to be streamlined. We have to know who's coming into this country. We have to vet them. We cannot have this this southern border problem continue on any longer.
Some have called on Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to resign for his handling of the southern border. Should Mayorkas resign?
Well, I'll give you a little bit a short answer, but a longer answer. Short answer: yes, he should. CEOs and employees, when they screw up, when they can't get the job done, they get fired, they get let go. Yes, he should. He should resign. And move on. We should appoint somebody new, somebody better and somebody new. Second, this goes along for Mikey Sherrill and Joe Biden as well. Joe Biden, his policy and his leadership in this country as president has been a failure. And Mikey Sherrill has been a willing participant in that failure, from stopping the Keystone Pipeline to the border control to a variety of issues, SALT, taxation, inflation. We are on the wrong track. America's on the wrong track. We needed to get it back on the right track. And Mikey Sherrill, we need to fire her. Joe Biden, next term, when he's up for election, we need to fire him too. We have to start putting America back on the right track. And again, I'm so sure that I'm the person to do it. I signed up for term limits already. I think term limits also have to be considered. We need to have people that don't get rich in Washington. They get there and they do their job.
So obviously you're trying to get your message out there for those who are looking to find more information about you. Where can
Thanks,
they
go? Joey. They can go to pauldegrootcares.com. That's Paul, my first name, DeGroot, D-E-G-R-O-O-T, cares, C-A-R-E-S.com. This is crunch time, Joey, and any donation, would love to have people join the campaign to take Mikey Sherrill and take on this fight and be a stakeholder in my race. So pauldegrootcares.com, and appreciate any help. Thanks.
All right, well, we'll have to leave it there. Republican congressional candidate for New Jersey's 11th District, Paul DeGroot. Thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Joey, it's always a pleasure. Call me anytime you want me to come back, and I'll talk again. Thank you very much.
Well, that about wraps it up for this week. Thanks so much for joining me, as always. To stay in touch with what's going on the show, all you have to do is follow me on social media, which you can do on Twitter at @Block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, remember what I told you a couple weeks ago about the website? There's a much easier way to find me now where you don't have to go through those million steps. And I'm going to tell you what it is. So if you've been going the other way to find your In Your Middle episodes, or if you just found this for the first time, you're like, oh my God, this is so great, but where do I go and find the next episode? Here's what you got to do. You got to go to that browser of yours, and you got to put in foxsportsradionewjersey.com. Again, that is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Again, one more time. It is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You put that in your browser and you're going to go right to the podcast page. So you don't have to go through any homepage, any of that pizzazz. You're going to be right on the Fox Sports podcast page. So all you're going to have to do from there is scroll down till you find In the Middle with Joey Block. You click on that button and all the episodes will be there with the newest one at the top. And we typically put them out there every Friday afternoon around 2 or 3 o'clock. So definitely be there. This is your home for all your midterm analysis, specifically as it relates to New Jersey. And we're going to take you through all the way to the November election and beyond. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back in next week with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.